Ouais, je...
Thanks for show you up on the webcam, that's fine. Thank you, Elisa, for joining us. Elisa is a short video of Elisa. Elisa graduated at McGill University in Canada. She's now a research fellow at Max Planck Institute for Astrophysics in Garching. And later this year, she will move to São Paulo as associate professor. Congratulations. Elisa worked on the dark sector, especially on dark matter. She has the field of expertise. She is part of two big collaborations, PFS, that we well know, and TLAM, and BINGO, which stands for Baryonic Oscillation in Neutral Gas Observations, the BINGO telescope. Elisa, we have usually 30 minutes, not sharp. I invite everybody to interrupt at any time to ask questions to make the seminar more live. Please, thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be talking to you. I hope we can meet in person soon. So for those who don't know me, I'm Elisa Ferreira. And today I'll be talking about this class of models that I call ultralight dark matter, but you might have heard the name wave dark matter or many other names. And I was asked to give an overview or a review of all those models. So I've prepared many slides, much more than I can possibly talk about. So maybe you guys can tell me which part of them you're interested. So I just keep talking about it, and you guys, please interrupt me for something that you want more detail, or we can go slower because I'm reviewing a big class of models. So let's see where we can go. So as we know, there's a huge amount of evidence for dark matter coming from all scales, from the largest cosmological scales to galaxies or even substructures of galaxies. And each of those evidences, measurements give us not only the necessity for dark matter, but also give us some of the properties that dark matter might have. From the largest scales, which are the most precise observations that we have, we were able to build the LambdaZDM model, which is the standard model for cosmology that describes the evolution of our universe. And in this model, dark matter is described by this cold dark matter fluid, has this hydrodynamical explanation, which reproduces quite well the observations on large scales. And dark matter then, in this paradigm called cold dark matter, which needs to be the description of dark matter on large scales, needs to be cold, pressureless, dark, which means no or weakly interacting with electromagnetic, collisionless, and we know the abundance that it should have today from the LambdaZDM model. So although we have all these amazing observations and we have these very precise observations on large scales, and we gather all this immense knowledge about dark matter, and we know it needs to be cold dark matter on large scales, we still don't know what dark matter is. And this uncertainty on what dark matter could be, so it needs to behave like cold dark matter on large scales, but there's still so many different mechanisms that you can invoke that reproduce this behavior on large scales, but can explain what dark matter is, invoking completely different mechanisms coming from new particles like a WIMP or even an ultralight particle like we're going to talk today, or even primordial black holes. So spamming something like 80 or 90 orders of magnitude. So we know a lot about dark matter, but at the same time, the uncertainty is really big. We can invoke completely different mechanisms to explain it. They all explain dark matter, the observations that we have nowadays, But they still spend a huge order of magnitude and a different amount of phenomena to describe what dark matter is. On top of that, although we need to have CDM on large scales, we, given the, that we never measure dark matter directly or even indirectly, and the uncertainty of dark matter's behavior on small scales, even those characteristics that we know the dark matter needs to have on large scales, we don't know if they hold in all scales. So how cold it is, how does it cluster in all scales? Is it really dark, collisionless? So we still don't know a lot about dark matter. Although we know a lot, we still don't know a lot. So this cold dark matter paradigm, although valid on large scales, it's challenged by this uncertainty on the small scale behavior. And this uncertainty on the small scales, you can also talk about these small scale challenges or problems, depending on how who you talk to, which are another set of characteristics that we see on dark matter on small scales that tells us that maybe there's a deviation from the CDM, from the normal CDM dark matter. Like, for example, the cusp core problem or the missing satellites, or even this regularity and diversity of rotation curve problems that tells us that galaxies, although they're very different, they're very diverse, they're very regular, which is embodied in some scaling relations. Like, for example, I show here the most common of them, which is the Baryonic-Tully-Fisher relation that relates the baryonic mass with the circular velocity. And it shows this remarkably tight correlation between these two quantities, which is not compatible with the one that you would expect from lambda CDM from simulations. So these incompatibilities between simulations or what is expected from CDM and what is observed, they might have many explanations. They might tell us, for example, that we need to include in those simulations the effects of baryons. Most of them only include, when these problems came, they only included dark matter. So it could be that now if we properly include those, and this is what we have been seeing lately, you can account for many of those small scale observations. But it could also be that I can explain some of those small scale problems with things like MOND. And when I mean MOND here, I don't want to get into the theory of MOND without dark matter. That's not what I mean. I mean the empirical relation that Milgram found in 1983, which tells us that the acceleration that we see for in regions where you have high acceleration, it follows the Newtonian acceleration. So we have like Newtonian dynamics. And in regions where you have low accelerations, where this H naught is a parameter that you measure from those scaling relations that I just showed, it follows this geometric mean of the Newtonian and this H naught, A naught. This has been shown to fit really well rotation curves and explain those scaling relations. So this could be probably one explanation for some of those challenges that we have on small scales. But we know that the theory of MOND, constructed by Milgram without dark matter, doesn't work in all scales. So it would have to be some theory that has this MOND behavior coming from a different theory. A third explanation would be to explain this different behavior of dark matter on small scales, it is to modify dark matter. So dark matter behaves like CDM on large scales, and on small scales, it has some different properties that explain the different behavior that dark matter might have in galaxies and other small scale behavior. And that is the route that we're following. Although feedback probably plays most of the role, maybe there is also this modified behavior of dark matter on small scales that could explain some of these discrepancies, or at least they are allowed by data. So that is the route that we're going to follow. And one of these models that has this modified behavior on small scales are the ultralight dark matter model, which is this huge class of models where dark matter is made of a bosonic component, so a scalar field, and that has a very small mass, the smallest possible mass where a particle could behave like dark matter. And what happens in this model? So the general idea of this model is the following. So if I have this ultralight bosonic candidate for dark matter, which is the lightest possible candidate for dark matter, this will have a large de Broglie wavelength. So let's just go back a little bit and remind ourselves about the wave particle duality. So if I have a particle, for example, and I perform this double slit experiment, I'll find a pattern. But if I have a wave, I'll find a different pattern. I'll have this interference and the constructive and destructive interference patterns. And we know from quantum mechanics, from the wave particle duality, that for example, an electron, which is something with a very small mass, will have a de Broglie wavelength, which can be written, for example, 1/mass times the velocity of this particle. It will have a large de Broglie wavelength. So it will behave like a wave for us. We can see the wave behavior. So if I have really small mass particles, they have large de Broglie wavelength. So you see the wave behavior of this particle. But if I have big, massive things, like for example here, a golf ball, the de Broglie wavelength is tiny. So although this also behaves like wave and particle, the regime where it behaves like a wave is so small that we cannot probe. So we see it as a normal particle. And here we're saying that ultralight dark matter is a candidate that should be around 10 to the minus 22 EV, which means 10 to the minus 57 kilograms, which is much smaller than this, and 10 to the minus 35 kilograms. This means then that you have this ultralight candidate that has a really large de Broglie wavelength of order of galaxy scales. So if I have a particle that has the mass around these values, what happens is that the de Broglie wavelength of this particle, it is of the size of the galaxy or of the order of the size of the galaxy. So if I observe small scales, if I observe, for example, a galaxy, I'll be probing this particle in its wave regime. So I'll be seeing this particle behaving as a wave. But if I go to larger scales, much, much larger than the de Broglie wavelength, I'm actually seeing this particle as a particle and not as a wave. Because the de Broglie wavelength, the wave that describes this particle, is smaller in comparison with the scales that I'm observing. So in these models, the general idea is that on large scales, dark matter behaves like a standard particle dark matter, so I see it as CDM. While when I go to galaxies, when I go to small scales, scales of the size of the de Broglie wavelength of these particles, what I see, it is the wave behavior of these particles. So what I probe actually is this particle as a wave. And this happens for those masses around galaxy scales. Another interesting phenomenon that can happen if you have dark matter behaving as a wave in galaxies is the possible formation of a Bose-Einstein condensate or superfluid in the interior of galaxies. And just so we can remind ourselves, Bose-Einstein condensate is one of the most intriguing phenomena in quantum mechanics on macroscopic scales. So it happens when you have, for example, a gas that has the particles here with distance d. So if you lower the temperatures of this gas in a way that the distance of these particles becomes smaller than the de Broglie wavelength of each of these particles, until the point that you have that each of the wave that represented these particles start to overlap, what happens is that all the particles is going to are going to be described then by this macroscopic wave, which is the overlap of each of the wavelength of the particles. And this is a Bose-Einstein condensate. A better definition for Bose-Einstein condensate is that at low when at low temperatures, I have all my particles in the ground state, in the lowest energy state of my fluid. And then the particles don't behave like a single particle anymore. They're going to behave collectively. So if I move one particle here, you kind of move the entire system. So you cannot treat the system anymore like a system of separate particles. Now the system is a collective system. And that's why we describe as a single wave function, like described here. And this is a Bose-Einstein condensate. A superfluid, it is a fluid that when it condenses into a Bose-Einstein condensate, has a very interesting characteristic, that it flows without friction. So as we can see here in this video, So when it condenses, it actually starts to flow outside the cup because it has no friction. So, and how do we describe these quantum mechanical systems? We describe them by the Schrödinger equation. So if we go back and remember physics from the undergrad, we describe these quantum mechanical systems that are described by the wave function. They are described by the Schrödinger equation, which is this equation here, where here is the potential that traps this condensate, and here is an interaction inside the condensate. So that is a Bose-Einstein condensate. And in these models, there is a possibility that this phenomenon, which is a quantum mechanical phenomenon, happens on macroscopic scales, on galactic scales. So I said that this particle needs to be very light. So all of this that I'm saying happens. So how light is ultralight? How do we find this, this range of masses here? So we want this different behavior to happen on galactic scales. So for this to happen on galactic scales, the maximum wavelength, the maximum de Broglie wavelength that I need to have, it is of the size of the halo of the galaxy. This will give you the minimum mass here, 10 to the minus 25. So if I have a mass that is 10 to the minus 25, this will mean that I have a de Broglie wavelength, which is the size of the halo of a galaxy. These values are for a Milky Way-like galaxy, for example. Or if I have a mass around 2 eV, I can have a bunch of waves. Dark matter is this described by this wave. And this wave is going to superpose and form the superposition of them are going to form a macroscopic wave function, which is of the size of the galaxy, which is given by the EV here, the upper mass. So we can have an idea that the de Broglie wavelength for example, something which is around 10 to the minus 25 EV is kiloparsec. And for something that is EV, which is 10 to the minus 35 kilogram, is parsec, of a scale of parsec. So if I have a mass that has a particle that has a mass that small, the de Broglie wavelength of this thing is of the size of kiloparsec. So it could be of the size or of the galaxy or of the size important for to change the dynamics inside of the galaxy. This is the general idea of the model, but there are many different models that have invoke exactly this mechanism to have this different behavior on small scales. And they receive many different names in literature. But they could actually be divided into three classes. So the first class is called fuzzy dark matter, which is basically, I just have this scalar particle, I have this bosonic dark matter, which has this very small mass. And this is a particle that is just subjected to gravity. So it's just going to be a gravitationally bound system. So it is like a WIMP, but only with a very small mass and a bosonic component. This is the fuzzy dark matter. There is a self-interacting fuzzy dark matter, which is like the fuzzy dark matter, but in this case, the particles, the dark matter particles interact with each other. So they're self-interacting. In this case, my system is described by the mass and by the interaction between them. The famous axions and axion-like particles that could be the QCD axion or even other axions, they are part of these two classes, the fuzzy dark matter and the self-interacting dark matter models. There are other models that also compose these two classes here. But basically, each of these classes, they have the same phenomenology on small scales. So it doesn't matter what is the origin of your particle, of your dark matter particle, they have the same phenomenology. Each of those classes have the same phenomenology. And the third class is a dark matter superfluid, which is a different type of ultralight dark matter, which in galaxies, inside galaxies, it forms a condensate, and the behavior of this dark matter particle inside galaxies behaves like MOND. So you have dark matter, and it is dark matter that is going to behave like MOND. This will give a completely different phenomenology than these two other models, but it is also be able to be achieved by only having a very light particle. And the beautiful thing about these models, in my opinion, is that you have a very rich phenomenology on small scales that you can probe and try to probe the properties of each of these class of models. So I'm going to talk first about these two classes, which are the most studied ones, and that we have more results, which are the fuzzy dark matter and the self-interacting fuzzy dark matter, which are these two here that I show. Again, like I said, those classes are the ones where axions and axion-like particles are part of, but also you have other ultralight particles that could be described in these models. And how do I describe them? So, like I said, this dark matter particle, it is described by a bosonic component. So I can describe as a scalar field. And it is a scalar field that is in gravity. So here, for example, I can describe as a scalar field that is in a Friedmann-Hobson-Walker background. When I have the self-interacting dark matter, I have this term here, which is a self-interaction. And if I don't have self-interaction, this term is not present, and I only have this. When I say that the axion and axion-like particles are part of this model, is because they have the same potential and they can describe the same equation as this model. The cosmological evolution of this model is the following. This scalar field is going to be going down this potential as expansion of the universe is happening, until a point where it hits the bottom of the potential and it oscillates in the bottom of the potential. When it oscillates in the bottom of the potential, this is where it behaves like dark matter. So you have that the average equation of state of this scalar field oscillating in the bottom of the potential, it is zero. So it behaves like dark matter. And you have to have the masses correct so you can have this behavior before recombination, for example. But the interesting behavior of these models are on small scales, and this is what we are interested. We're interested in knowing how this dark matter behaves different than CDM, for example, on small scales. And for that, we take the non-relativistic regime of that previous equation. So when we take the relativistic regime of non-relativistic regime of this equation, what we actually get is the Schrödinger equation. So my scalar field now it is represented by this, that was represented by the Klein-Gordon equation that I showed above. Now is represented by, is given by the Schrödinger equation, where this big phi here is the gravitational potential here, so it's described by the Poisson equation. So now the system that describes my dark matter on small scales, it is a coupled system of the Schrödinger equation coupled to the Poisson equation. And in the case where I don't have interaction, so I don't have this, I have the fuzzy dark matter model. And in the case that I have interaction, I have the self-interacting fuzzy dark matter model. And although we have heard about self-interacting dark matter and warm dark matter, we can here see already that this model is fundamentally different than those models, because this is really described by a Schrödinger-like equation, which is different than, for example, a self-interacting dark matter or even a warm dark matter model. I can make a change of variables done here. So I can write these equations like a fluid equations. So here, if I make this change of variables, I can write as a continuity equation and an Euler-like equation. These are the Madelung equations. And this describes a fluid equation like we think, but with an extra term, which is this term. This term is called quantum pressure. It is not quantums, but this is a historical name for it. And it only appears in this type of model. So if I have, for example, self-interacting dark matter, we don't have this term. I can recover CDM, for example, in the limit that m goes to infinity of this equation. But this equation is really the Euler-like equation for this wave, that I have on small scales. So it has this quantum pressure, which will be a term that will counter, for example, the gravity, the action of gravity. And if I have self-interactions from the self-interacting model, I'll have another pressure here, which will come from self-interactions. So this equation shows us that the dynamics of this dark matter on small scales is going to be fundamentally different from CDM, warm dark matter, or self-interacting dark matter. And we can already see that from this equation. So here I have now quantum pressure. And quantum pressure, for example, in the case of the fuzzy dark matter, is going to be counterbalancing gravity. So you always have this competition between quantum pressure and gravity. And in the case of having interaction, you'll also have either an attractive interaction or a repulsive interaction, either helping or not gravity. With that competition between quantum pressure and gravity, we can have this Jing's length here, which is where those terms are the same, which is a finite Jing's length, which means that inside this Jing's length, I don't have structure formation. Outside this Jing's length, I have structure formation like CDM. But inside the Jing's length, where this wave behavior is manifest, I won't have structure formation. So this will give us then a very different phenomenology. In the case of having interaction, this Jing's length, or here a characteristic length, is going to be very different. For in the case of attractive interaction, this Jing's length is really, really small. So if I think, for example, of QCD axions, which are something that has attractive interaction, that has a mass 10 to the minus 5 eV, which is within the regime. This will give me a soliton, which is this this clump of dark matter in the middle, which is of the order of 10 to the minus 5 kiloparsec. So this is not important for us. So this will be important maybe for other types of experiments. But for example, in the case of fuzzy dark matter, for a Milky Way-like galaxy, we can see that the Jing's wavelength is something like 55 kiloparsec. So if I have a dark matter of around 10 to the minus 20 eV, I'll have this I'll have this Jeans length of order of the galaxy size. So this is going to influence structure formation. For example, this is going to suppress structures. So since I have this finite Jeans length, if I, for example, calculate the two-point correlation functions that we can see here from two simulations, CDM and fuzzy dark matter, we can see that, for example, the power spectrum, this is the matter power spectrum. So this is the Fourier transform of the two-point correlation function. The blue line is CDM. We're going to see that depending on the mass, the smallest the mass is, I'm going to have a bigger suppression of the power spectrum on small scales. This translates to having less structure. So this suppression of the power spectrum, this suppression of the formation of structures on small scales is going to be translated in this halo mass function, which is also going to be suppressed. So depending on the mass here, for example, here 10 to the minus 22 EV, we are going to suppress the formation of halos that are smaller than 10 to the 8 solar masses, or depending on the mass of this thing, you can suppress the formation of halos of different masses. And this can, for example, be used to explain the missing satellite problem or even the too big to fail. Another characteristic that we have because of this Jeans length, because of the fact that you don't have structure formation in the interior of the galaxies, is the formation of cores. So here we can see a simulation that we did with a student of mine, where we evolved this halo, and we can see that it forms a core in the middle. So if you have these models, because you don't have structure formation in the interior of galaxies, instead of having a cuspy, a Navarro-Frankowitz profile, you're going to have a cored profile that from simulations can be described by this. This is a fitting function that we have from simulations. So these models not only suppress structure, but they form a core in the interior of galaxy. Another interesting phenomenon that happens is wave interference. So now I have waves describing my dark matter. So not only when I form my halo, but even when I form my the structure of the universe, I'm going to have interference patterns, as we can see here. So we see this that people call the granules, that are patterns of constructive and destructive interference. Maybe you can see better in this. Here it's very good to see in the simulation that we have this constructive and destructive interference patterns. They are hard to observe because they are the order of the de Broglie wavelength, so they probably have the order of kiloparsec or even smaller depending on the mass. But maybe we have to think harder if there is a way of observing this wave-like behavior. I'm going to skip this, but there's another very cool behavior from the fact that it's a wave, which is the formation of vortices that you can try to probe those in galaxies. Last but not least, you have those dynamical effects, which are, for example, the formation of Bose-Einstein condensate and superfluid that we have seen in simulations that they actually happen. So here is a simulation where you simulate just the formation of a halo, and you have a Bose-Einstein condensate forming in the interior of the halo. And these effects, they have observational implications that can help us measure, for example, the mass or the interaction in these models. So I'm just going to give really quick the example of fuzzy dark matter here, which is the best bounded of these systems. So this is the bounds in the mass of the fuzzy dark matter model. Here, the highlighted regions are the forbidden regions. So we can see here, for example, that 10 to the minus 22, which is usually classically thought as the mass that would solve the small scale problems, for example, it is already excluded by data. And for example, this data is the following. So we use data like CMB, Lyman alpha, and 21 centimeter to probe the suppression of the power spectrum or the suppression of the formation on small scales. And this gives us bounds on the mass. We can use, for example, Lyman alpha, which is the best bound that we have nowadays, is one of the best bounds that we have nowadays. Then because it's, if you don't have structures, those small scale structures in the universe, when you had reionization, for example, this would change the reionization history a lot. So it's possible to see, put bounds on the mass using Lyman alpha forest and 21 centimeter. We can, for example, use stellar streams or gravitational lensing to also probe the lack of structure on small scales, which gives us this bound here. We can use dynamical friction and heating, which are dynamical effects from the fact that you have a wave there, to also put bounds. You can see that by the heating of the Milky Way disk or globular clusters. Or you can use the fact that there is a core in the middle of the galaxy. And for that, you can use, for example, as we did in this work, we can use ultra-faint dwarfs. So in this work, which is the best bound nowadays for the mass of the fuzzy dark matter particle, we use ultra-faint dwarfs to measure the possibility of having a core, a soliton core, so to have this wave region in the middle of the galaxy. And we have a bound here of that the mass needs to be 10 to the minus 19 eV. So this is the strongest constraint to date. Really quickly, you can also use things like black holes for radiance. I'm almost done. Which is, if you have a rotating black hole, the energy of the rotation of this black hole is going to create these ultralight particles. And around the black hole, a rotating black hole, then you have a cloud of ultralight particles, which are expected given their small mass. So if you use information from binary systems, you can put bounds on the mass of these particles using super radiance. And then you have these bounds, for example, in the fuzzy dark matter model, which are really narrowing down the possibility of this model working, which is the most popular model. We can also, all that I said now, it is if dark matter is 100% of the dark matter of the universe, but it doesn't need to be. Axons could be only a part of the dark matter. And in the future with 21 centimeter, but also PFS and Lightbird and CMB, we can actually probe the masses where dark matter is not 100% of the dark matter. Yeah, so all I said now is only gravitational probes, but if you also consider that the axion interacts with photons, you can also have those indirect and even direct bounds on the mass of this system that I'm not going to talk about.
Lisa.
I'm done.
By your talk, but we are running out of time, even though it's interesting.
No, I'm done. I knew I was not going to be able to talk about the superfluid dark matter. Which is also not so well studied. I wanted to really give the bounds on the fuzzy dark matter and the others because they're much better studied. So I'm glad to answer questions about the superfluid dark matter. And I end here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jill, for this really, really nice talk. I see people clapping. So even though we are later than usual, it was so interesting that I hope there's a lot of comments and questions. So please.
I apologize for
coming. I can start. No, it's fine. It was really interesting. A couple of very much. marginal questions. The first one was you showed the nice picture of simulation with granules, which can we observe them?
Yeah, so this is a big open question. We would love to observe this. So it is a very interesting effect, right? The thing is that these granules or these interference patterns, they are of the order of the de Broglie wavelength. So if I have, for example, dark matter that is 10 to the minus 20 eV, this is smaller than kiloparsec. So I would have to find a way of observing some structure in scales sub kiloparsec. But what would be the effect, right? What would be, will I have a, I don't know, a big amount of gas in this interference patterns, which are constructive? So we still don't know, like no one had ideas on how to observe this. Usually what we think is that these are too small to be observed, too small of effect to be observed. But I must say that there's a paper a few years ago that claims that there is this collision of two galaxies where you can see in the outskirts, you can see interference patterns. Yeah, so people are very skeptical about it. But yeah, there's this paper that claims that if you have really the collision of two galaxies, and they have an example of a system there. They claim that in the outskirts of this this system, you can actually see that all the of the matter, all the gas and everything, it's follows these interference patterns. I think, yeah, people nowadays don't know if we have precision enough to see it. So any ideas are welcomed here.
Thank you. Albert Bosma just left and he thanks for your excellent talk. We have a question by Emmanuel Nesri. Please.
Yes, thanks. So thanks really for this very, very nice review. My question is about the justification of such candidate. For example, if I take QCD action, the justification of such particle is linked to a fundamental aspect, so the strong QCD problem. Do we have other other model like this where the justification of such particle is linked to more fundamental questions?
Yeah. So you could have axon-like particles coming from string theory and from other quantum gravity models that produce many of those ultralight relics that they remain in the universe and they can behave like dark matter. Actually, when we're talking about ultralight, because the QCD axon is actually not light enough to have all these effects that I'm talking about. So the QCD axon can behave like dark matter, but is not in this class of ultralight in the sense that it won't have these effects that I'm talking here. It will have, of course, all the indirect and direct detection effects. But if you have to have like ultralight candidates, axon-like particles, you can produce them a lot from string theory, for example. You have all this exiverse that is possible. Mm-hmm.
I know, but do you have a link with another question? Not just justification, but a link with another fundamental question that we have in the theory.
I don't think so. We have for these ultralight ones that we have such a good motivation like we have for the QCD axon, right? So we know that the QCD axon, it is very is an important solution for particle physics. We don't have this strong motivation for any of the other candidates. And most of them actually, so I talked about all these models, most of them are mostly phenomenological. You can have these axon-like particles that are that light, but most of these models are very phenomenological. You just say that you produce this during inflation or at some point by some mechanism and you go along. So yeah, no, I don't think like as the QCD axon, we have a good motivation to have such a light axon light particle.
Okay, thank you very much. And just maybe a comment about the size of the core you obtain in simulation compared to the size of the core we observed in reality. Is there a good matching?
Yeah, so for example, here in the, that is actually a very interesting question. So I showed here the result for, this is the result here, if you have ultra faint dwarfs. So if I use ultra faint dwarf galaxies, and I try to fit this profile, which is what I get from simulations, which is this core and an NFW around. So they fit well, the ultra-faint dwarfs, if the mass is around here, 10 to the minus 19 EV. But there is a big discrepancy that no one knows how to explain yet with the classical dwarfs. So this bound here below, it is a bound that comes from Fornax and Sculpture, mostly. So if you do the same thing that I did here for the ultra-faint dwarfs that I got this bound, if I do it for Sculpture and Fornax, I actually get that to explain the core in those dwarfs, I need to have a much smaller mass. So this is the not allowed region. And you see, this is incompatible with all the other bounds, right? So if I use ultra-faint dwarfs to explain a possible core in ultra-faint dwarfs, which would be a very small core for these masses, I need this mass, like 10 to the minus 19. This will give a very tiny core, I must say. So that's why we never claim a discovery. We just say it's a bound, because it's such a tiny core. That is very hard to say. We don't have statistical significance to say. But if you use a classical dwarf here like this, you get a completely different result. You get that it needs to be super small, the mass. It needs to be smaller than 10 to the minus 22, which means that it has a big core.
Okay.
So there is this, this is an open question in the field now, this incompatibility. It could be from baryonic effects. It could be because those are not universal. Those profiles, they are taking from simulations, and those simulations, they don't even include mergers. So this is a big open question in the field.
Okay. Thank you very much for your answer and your talk.
Any other question or comment? Philippe, I see two questions by Philippe and by Doris. If you want to unmute, or I can read the questions. Philippe is asking, how do you produce those light particles?
Yeah, so again, we need a non-thermal mechanism in the early universe to produce this type of light particles. So we know it cannot be a thermal. If it's a thermal dark matter candidate, it needs to be, has a mass bigger than QEV. So you need a non-thermal mechanism in the early universe to produce them. And we have many of them in the literature. The most common is the misalignment mechanism to produce this type of light particles during inflation, for example. But like I was talking to Emmanuel before, to really talk about a macrophysical explanation, like the QCD axon, we actually don't have it, a very good, as good as mechanism to produce as the QCD axon that comes from, really from the standard model. We have cosmological mechanisms to produce them during inflation. To produce these axon light particles, for example. Let me know if I answer your question or not. I can elaborate more.
In the chat, in the meanwhile, I'm going to read the question by Doric, who's thanking you for your very nice talk. She's asking, I heard about some discussions on the possibility of presence of a still undiscovered fundamental force that could explain the observation without the need of dark matter. Do you have any comment on this?
So lately the discussion about, if a few years ago I would talk about Mond or about any other force or any other modification of gravity to describe dark matter instead of dark matter, this would be almost a heresy, right? People don't like it. Who likes it. Who doesn't like it. But it's true that lately people have been developing new models that try to explain, because the problem of Mond was like Mond can explain galaxies quite well, but as you go to larger scales, clusters, CMB, it cannot explain. You need dark matter. But there are new models nowadays. There are phenomenological models that attempt to describe dark matter, this necessity of dark matter without dark matter, with a modification of gravity. And they can explain, for example, the CMB. Those are still under scrutiny. So you don't have only to explain the CMB, you also have to explain the large scale structure. So people, what they did is amazing, actually, this new model. I don't remember the name of the authors, but I can look it up and send it to you. They can explain the peaks of the CMB without dark matter. So it would be very nice to see if they can also explain the large scale structure, which is known to be very hard to explain without dark matter as well. So yeah, there are new ideas. And my personal opinion is that it's nice to investigate. We shouldn't just keep the mind closed, because the fact is that it has been pretty hard to find dark matter, so all ideas are very invited, but it's very tough. It's very tough to explain with a different force or with modification of gravity all this evidence that you have on large scales, especially on cosmological scales like the CMB. CMB has been one of the big things for dark matter, right? So yeah, I think it's advancing in the past year, actually. I would love to hear someone else's opinion about it.
I don't see any reaction, so I guess that your answer is fine.
There's a paper by Spergel where he tells you all the what are the things that you need to accomplish to explain dark matter. So if you have a new model, you have to explain all these five steps. One of them is CMB, for example. So people are trying to...
Is it a recent paper?
Yeah, it's a recent paper by Dave Spergel. Yeah, Dave Spergel in 2020. He puts the five conditions to explain dark matter that a model would have to explain either dark matter or not dark matter. And in the same day, this paper that I claim with this modified gravity model came and explained, I think, four of them. It only did not explain the large scale structure. And I don't know why they didn't do it. Maybe time. So yeah, it's advancing, but it's like from past year that I would say that these ideas are being considered more.
Yeah. So we are now definitely running out of time. So
I apologize for that.
No, it's fine. It means that the discussion and the presentation was nice, definitely nice. So let me thank you again, Elisa. I would like to remind you all this. The next week we'll have a cafe club by Céline Perrou. Manuel is advertising the paper on the chat. Okay, and again, I hope you can be in touch. in the future for future development on these topics.
Yes, and of course. Please send me an email if you have any questions, ideas, or comments.
Thank you very much again. And see you next week, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.